Green and Green House, which is still standing at 316 Cedar. It's a small house, that is a Green and Green House, and I have the plans from the library in Pasadena, and the architect sketching of that house, and they said that house was, you know, was in Long Beach, but they didn't know the address. But that was the Jenny Reeves house number two. Jenny Reeves house number one, they knew that was a 306 Cedar. We know about that house. But this is a 316 next door. And right now we don't, we've notified the owner apparently and the people who live there, but had no response. But across the street right now there's an antique store, and I asked the proprietor in there one time if they knew the, what was across the street. And I said, yeah, we know it. We don't know much about the house. It's a lot of people come in at night and make a lot of noise, and we maybe they're up to no good. But the house is still there. The other thing that I found, and Ms. Forbes said we have a picture of it now, was that Hitching Green. It's catty-cornered from where Beckham's new store is to be, on 3rd Street and American Avenue, right across the street from the back door of the post office. There's that iron ring on a loop in the curb, she made that there. There used to be a lot of them in town, but that's the only one I know of right now. And it's still there. And this club said that somebody had taken a picture of it so they could preserve it, at least.
Okay, I was going to ask you about your education.
I went to Washington Junior High School, and I went to Poly High School.
Yeah. And what did you study?
I studied just a college preparatory course. But having had a start in Spanish in junior high school, I continued taking Spanish in high school. So I took all the Spanish courses they could offer. I had elective courses in Spanish in high school. And I took physics and chemistry and Latin and English. And then I thought that I wanted to go into medicine, but I thought, well, just because I wanted to go into medicine is no sign I should, but maybe I'd try architecture. So I went to USC because they had a good school of architecture. I went to USC and enrolled in the school of architecture. But I didn't like it. And I switched then to a pre-med course
at
USC. And I dropped out of USC about, I started in September, I guess. About November, I guess I dropped out because I was having some dental work done downtown. Dr. Whitted, who's a lovely dentist. I remember that the old building still there. And apparently, everything went well until the next day, somehow. I went to the dentist probably Friday. But Saturday, I began having a lot of pain in one eye. Well, it turned out that in the cornea, there had been a little ulceration of the cornea. And I went up to one doctor and another right at noontime Saturday, and they were closing. But finally, Dr. Sherry said, come on in. And he was about 12th in time. He was a very fine doctor, of course. And he checked on it, he said, there's a little fleck of glue in that eye. So he had to dig it out. But I put up, I had to keep my eye bandaged for quite a while. That hangs up on the school.
Were you living in LA?
No, I was living in Los Angeles to go to school. I was living with an aunt who lived up there at 151 South Virgil in the house that my grandfather built in 1911. But I came home to do the Beta Street. So I just stayed home and started in school, then had it begun again in first year in pre-medical school. So I finished pre-med, and then I put in my application for medical school, of course. And I thought it'd be awfully hard to get in medical school, so I put in my application to 11 different schools. And Stanford was the only one that I didn't get accepted at. But I thought, that's the one I really want to go to. But I was accepted in Pennsylvania and others. I was accepted the other places, some of them. But, so I went up there 1 week. I took off 1 week, one day, I guess. I went up to San Francisco, to Palo Alto, and had an interview with some of the professors, because they said they'd chosen part of the class already, but they hadn't chosen the rest of the class. So I went up there in the meantime and had an interview with some of the professors. So then I got in Stanford. So I went to Stanford. I went up there in the fall of 1932. And then I finished school at Stanford, took an internship at the San Diego County Hospital. And then I took assistant residency at the Pottinger Sanatorium in Monrovia, because I was interested in tuberculosis, and Dr. F.M. Pottinger was part of the finest tuberculosis specialist in the United States. And after a year from there, then I went back to San Francisco to be a resident in tuberculosis at the San Francisco County Hospital, the Stanford service. And I was up there for a year. And then I would take some graduate work in at the Olive View Sanatorium, and they were offering the civil service exams, but they were offering the civil service exam for the county health department. So I thought, well, I'll take the exam to see what civil service exams are like. So I took the exam for the health department and passed that, and well, fuck. I forgot whether I was first or second or third on that list. But anyhow, I didn't hear from him. When I came to Los Angeles one time, I stopped by the Dr. Pomeroy's office and said, "Why, what happened to that exam I took?" Well, he said, "You in San Francisco, we thought you didn't write it, maybe you wouldn't write it." And he kept talking to me. Well, he found out that I had studied quite a bit of Spanish and was able to speak Spanish. He said, he just kept me in the office and had the man come down and take me to the health department, and I sat there while they told the man who had engaged to pick up and go, and they put me in the job. So I worked in the health department. I thought the law was coming along, and no use going to private practice now and sit tight. So I went into the Army in October of
41.
Well, I worked in the health department then from 39,
yeah.
From June of 39 until October of 41.
Yeah.
I worked in the health department. Then I took a leave of absence from the health department.
In the health department?
Oh, I was tuberculosis clinician to the health, and I had clinics in Compton and Whittier and Santa Monica and West LA. Then East LA too.
Why was it important for you to fix it?
Well, because so many of the patients are Spanish Mexicans, and so many are. In fact, they gave me the East LA clinic, which is all Spanish. And then I went into the Army, and after the Army, I went back into the health department, and they gave me some connection. They finally gave me East Los Angeles again, and all of it's conducted in Spanish there. All Spanish. All Mexicans. In fact, in Belfast, a lot of Spanish speaking everywhere. Compton. Compton was Spanish. Compton, you know, they were Mexicans. It wasn't colored in Mexican Compton. All Mexicans. So, then I stayed at the health department, and then I went to the city health department. So I transferred to the Los Angeles City Health Department until I retired in, about 10 years ago. But after the war, they wanted people to help them with the National Guard to do the physical examinations, a doctor for that, evenings. So I was trying to build up. I had nothing to do, so I went down and helped them in the National Guard, and I got acquainted, and I liked them. I thought, well, I'm here all the time, and I like them, and so I might as well join them. So I joined the National Guard. And I set up, after I came back from the Army, I set up a private office. So I had the private practice, the National Guard, and the health department. And so I did all three of those until I retired about 10 years ago.
Where did you live during all this time?
I always lived in Long Beach. I lived in my parents' 1146 Cedar until I went away to the Army in 41. And then while I was at Camp Roberts in 1941, I was married in 42 at Camp Roberts. One of the chapels down by the laundry. So after the war, Elizabeth and I came back, and we...
Is she someone you've known from the
Army? Yes, I've known her beforehand. And she came up to Camp Roberts and stayed with me for over a year. And then when I was transferred to go overseas, she came on back to her mother's home in Long Beach. And then when her mother died, and after the war, I came back, and then Elizabeth and I stayed at my parents' house for a short time. Well, my mother had built on the back of the lot a small guest house. So we stayed there for a while until we got an apartment of our own. And we lived in the apartment at 2375 Chestnut until about 1945 or 46. And then we moved to where we live now, 3839 Pine Avenue. So I've been there for a while.
A few years.
Yeah, about 30. Been there about almost 40 years. Almost 40 years at 3839 Pine Avenue.
What was the neighborhood like when you moved out there?
Well, it was very much as it is now, because that neighborhood built up in about the 10 or 11, 12, 13, 14, and then some fine homes began to be built in Los Ruiz about 1914, 15, 16, 17. There's a very nice home. Pacific Avenue, this is from the history I read, Pacific Avenue was called Pacific Boulevard, and there's some fine homes along Pacific Boulevard. But when the thing oil was discovered in the Los Ruiz area, people moved out. The houses were moved out, mostly moved out, or few destroyed, or one or two were boarded up. But it became kind of an oil field up there. Very few houses. Then after the... another thing happened. The country club moved up to this present location about 1921, I think.
Yeah.
So it was becoming kind of a nice residential area then. Some held for death in 21, and they found that they did not have to move those. However, there were some fine homes that built on Signal Hill, and when the oil came, they moved those houses, and strange enough, some of them moved from Signal Hill and ended up in Los Angeles. Not many, but that's just enough to make it confusing. So, then after the oil subsided, and the people had, many people had made very much money, you see, they became very wealthy for the oil, then they started building up very fine homes in Los Ritas. And so that was, say, from the beginning of the 30s. It started being built up. And then, of course, the other thing that happened in Long Beach was the earthquake in 33. Well, about 19... In 33, the Farmers Merchants Bank building apparently was damaged. So that's Mr. Walker's present bank, C.J. Walker, with his son's wife, Casita Walker, had a sister who is a Mrs. Williams, apparently, and her husband is an architect. Mr. Williams and Kenneth Wing were classmates in college. And Kenneth Wing went on into the architecture part of it, but Mr. Wallace went into the engineering part of it. But anyhow, Mr. Wallace came down from Los Angeles. He lived in Huntington Park of it to do repair work on the Farmers Merchants Bank building. And so he said, well, while he's spending so much time in Long Beach, he might as well build himself a house. So he built the house that I'm living in now. So then 36, 37, there were some new buildings in there. But the elegant fine homes were up on Country Club Drive, see, or up on the north end of Pacific Avenue, and so from
there. So you weren't in Long Beach
when
you
worked at Pacific? No, I was in Palo Alto going to medical school, and I had told my roommate sometime before. I said, well, when I go to bed, I really sleep sound, don't wake me up or anything. But they heard on the radio about it, the earthquake, but he didn't tell me the next morning. And I didn't come down to Long Beach until spring vacation, I guess, or something. By that time, things, the mess was pretty well cleaned up. There's you place in Long Beach right now, I see houses that have a bay window installed where the fireplace used to be. Because I know the houses had a fireplace with brick chimney and all this, with the windows on the side. Now I see the windows on the side, but a big bay window in the middle. So that's some of the remains of the earthquake. I wasn't in town when that happened.
So when you lived in Los Angeles, it was pretty much built up?
It was pretty much built up. The house I lived in was built in 1937,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
And there were a few vacant lots in Los Angeles, a few. But now there's, I think, maybe a couple.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's one of the first houses was that house that was built by Bixby House on La Linda Drive. It was built in 1898, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then about 1917, also, there was quite a few, by 1917, there were quite a few other houses built here, there, and sparsely around.
Can you close your private passage
along the trees you have there? Oh, my office is on here, 9th and Locust. Dr. Wall had, after the war, he had just built this new building. Places were hard to come by. And my brother's a dentist, and he knew Dr. Wall was going to build a building, so he put me in touch with Dr. Wall. And Dr. Wall said, yes, he's going to build this building. And he had his, for himself, his dentist building. And the other building was for a dentist and a doctor. And he had built it in view of a Dr. Fitzgerald he had known. But after Dr. Fitzgerald came back from the Army, he didn't want to practice medicine anymore. So although the space was really built for this Dr. Fitzgerald, I think, he didn't want it. So Dr. Wall said I could have it. Well, he hadn't even started building it yet. And I said, well, I'd like to take a space there. Can I give you a down payment or something to hold a space for me while I'm building? He said, no, because I know your brother. He says, if you're anything like your brother, he says, your word's good for it. So I waited until the building was finished. And I got out of the Army in October of 45, and then moved into the building as I guess August of 46. So I've been there until I retired about 10 years ago.
And
did
you practice
at
the Seaside Hospital?
Or? Well, I did. I had kidney patients up at Seaside Hospital, which is the old house up there on 14th and Chestnut. And I took some to St. Mary's and some to the community hospital. It depended on, if I had one person at Seaside, then the next one I put in was so I didn't have to be going all over town. And of course my work was in tuberculosis. And people were afraid of tuberculosis. And the hospital would not be open to tuberculosis patients unless they went in for some other reason and also had TB. And they'd have to be isolated. So I couldn't put them in a hospital very easily. And of course many of them I didn't need the hospital life either. Because by the time they were able to have office attention, they were no longer bedridden. They were ex-sanatorium patients. So I didn't have a great hospital practice.
I should know the history of tuberculosis, but could you talk about it a little bit? You know, when medicine decided that figured out how to deal with it in an efficient way.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting career because tuberculosis was a very fatal, almost fatal diagnosis. If you told a person that tuberculosis, you're giving a very bad diagnosis. And I tried all the time to, how in the world can I tell them what their diagnosis is without making them feel very depressed? How can I present this to them without making them feel depressed? And I tried all different ways to do it. And I would finally say, well, now, fortunate for you, we know how to... Well, it really wasn't until we really knew a different way to treat it that I could tell them, well, now we can assure you you're going to get well because we know what's the matter with you, because we know how to treat what your problem is because we found out what it is. But before that, when you told them, we tried to talk nice to them, you know, really, a lot of it was kind of wishful thinking. We had no really efficient way of treating tuberculosis. Bed rest, of course, was the thing to do in a sanatorium. Then they would develop other problems, being in bed too much. Pneumothorax treatments were given, which some thought were good, some were bad. And of course, you'd run into complications with it, too. Surgery was coming along. That's why I thought I'd go out of here, because we'd probably have to do some surgery. Although I thought I wouldn't do the surgery, I'd like to know when it's indicated. But I did a lot of pneumothorax treatments. But it wasn't until medication became known para-aminosalicylic acid, PAS first. And that didn't show up on the horizon until perhaps at the end of World War Number 2. About then. And then after that, streptomycin injections was coming along. And then another medication, isonicotinic acid hydrochloride, INH, which was a very fine medication. But we didn't know exactly what was the best method of using these medications. But it soon became evident how was the best way to do it. And so this took place while I was in the health department and having my private practice as well. So after a while, the medication was the big thing, not the pneumothorax treatments. Few, but not too many. Oh, I used to have to take patients, the overflow from the Veterans Hospital in my office, and that sort of thing. For treatment. Then the veterans would pay me for looking after their patients, because they couldn't handle all of them in their outpatient clinics or something. I don't know. You were very busy for a while, but then later and later things changed. Then mostly emphysema became the chest problem.
Mm-hmm.
And for that there was really not very much you could do. The tuberculosis, we could give pneumothorax treatments for emphysema.
So did tuberculosis pretty much cease to be a problem then after?
Well, it's a problem, and they've had it pretty under control very well with the medication. Of course, there's some people who don't respond to medication, and some who never take it because they don't know they've got tuberculosis. But our problem was that the people coming up to Mexico and going back and forth to Mexico, because the families are split. They're part of family, they're part of family here. And we never knew what the household was here, because every time they make a house call, it'd be different members of family. So there's a lot of tuberculosis coming up from Mexico. And then, of course, after Vietnam, a lot of it coming to the Orient. And so they began to kind of let down on their tuberculosis control, and the incidence of tuberculosis. Of course, there were more people too, but the problem became quite a problem again. But they were trying to get by with seeing the patients less often, fewer house calls, less. Fewer x-rays and saving money. And
is part of your work at the health department calling on people in their
homes? No, they had to do that. I had to call on their home. Make house calls. We'd make their house calls probably at least once a month. But then later on, we didn't make too many house calls. At the beginning we did. We had to, sure different in those days. Had to keep them from leaving home. Try to keep them from spreading the disease. I don't know. Then the surgery came into it, and that's kind of out, and medication took over, of course, and it's so easy to get the medication. But there's quite a revolution in the treatment of tuberculosis.
Okay.
Oh, well, I think I must be boring you to death here.
No, I'm worried about you being tired. This is my short.
Well, maybe we should continue another time. Okay.